Today, a one-hour reading of sports news from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday and Thursday. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Some Sounds of Arizona. And let's begin today's reading with some baseball features. First feature is headlined, Champion Dodgers Thinking Dynasty, quote-unquote, we're hungrier than ever. And this feature, written by Bob Nightingale, columnist for USA Today, Dateline, Phoenix. There were no champagne bottles or tubs of beers in the Los Angeles Dodgers clubhouse. There was not a piece of confetti in sight. And no one was getting fingers sized for the 2025 World Series championship rings. The Dodgers kept trying to tell everyone who would listen that last year was last year, and even after spending another $471 million on free agents and contract extensions during the winter, it still does not guarantee a darn thing for 2025. Quote, we didn't win last year by talking about the World Series every day, All-Star Mookie Betts said. We won last year because we talked about the task at hand. I think we have to continue to talk about the task at hand and not worry about the end goal. We cannot race to the finish line, unquote. The trouble is, no one outside the Dodgers clubhouse buys it. Not when you look around and see future Hall of Famers, MVPs, Cy Young Award winners, and the deepest and most talented team in all of the land. Quote, it was crazy working out this winter in Miami with different players, infielder Miguel Rojas said, and guys like Arizona D-backs outfielder Lourdes Gurriel kept telling me, come on, how many guys do you need? You guys are signing everyone. Enough is enough, unquote. Rojas laughed, knowing with the bevy of talent that the Dodgers have, they not only could become the first National League team to repeat as World Series champion since the Cincinnati Reds in 1975 and 76, but they could also eclipse the regular season record of 116 victories set by the 2001 Seattle Mariners. Quote, you've got to put some goals in your life, you know, especially with this kind of team, Rojas said. So why not shoot for the best? This team is pretty set to win a lot of baseball games. Obviously, that's not our goal to win 116 games, but to win the last game in October or November like we did last year. The message our front office sent to everybody this winter was that we are not just satisfied with winning one championship. We want to create something special that will always be remembered and sustainable, unquote. Yes, Rojas is talking about the potential of a dynasty, just like the Yankees built from 1996 to 2003 when they won 4 World Series titles and 6 American League pennants. We finally got the team over the hump last year, so it was a little bit of relief on that aspect, third baseman Max Muncy said. I know we won in 2020, but you want to get that full season won. And now that we did, we want to win more. We have the team to win more, so it's almost like we're hungrier than ever, unquote. The proof is that although the Dodgers didn't have their first full workout until last weekend, Muncie, Betts, and Rojas had already been working out together at Camelback Ranch for about 2 weeks. Three-time Cy Young winner Clayton Kershaw didn't even officially sign his contract before he was working out with the Dodgers. The Dodgers have reached the postseason in 12 consecutive seasons, winning 11 division titles, 4 pennants, and 2 World Series, so it's not like they've ever been anything but one of the game's top powers. Yet, this year is different. This year, they have their biggest payroll in franchise history. This year, they have 9 starting pitchers and a deep bullpen where 4 relievers can be called on to save games after the signings of Tanner Scott and Kirby Yates. This year, they have a starting lineup that owns 5 MVP awards and 27 All-Star selections. And this year, they have a DH who hit 54 homers and stole 59 bases last year, who also is scheduled to return to the mound in Shohei Ohtani. I've always really felt that we kind of had a target on our back, Muncy said. Part of that is when you play at Dodger Stadium, it's sold out on a Tuesday in July. Every opposing pitcher seems to find a couple of miles an hour. It's always felt like that. People tend to find an extra edge against us. But now, maybe even more so, especially with the comments you're seeing from other players out there, unquote. The Dodgers are not going to go undefeated. They likely will not win more than 116 regular season games. There's not even a guarantee that they'll win the division. The Dodgers really couldn't care less, they said, as long as they punch their ticket into October, where they'll take their chances. The most important thing is to just make the postseason, Muncy said. It doesn't matter if you have 90 wins, 121 wins. It doesn't matter what place you're in. It really doesn't matter at all. We're not putting a number out there that we need to win a certain amount of games. We just want to make sure that we're in the best spot to win when it comes to October. So you can't look at what we've already done. You can't look at what we're trying to do. We're just focusing on what we can do at this moment, unquote. One day, perhaps after a few more titles, maybe then they can all look back and reflect on their time together, playing in the most glorious era in Dodgers history, perhaps after establishing a dynasty. Quote, hopefully in a couple of years, Muncy said, I'll get a chance to look back and think that, but not right now. We know who we are in here. It's honestly a pleasure and a blessing to show up to work with these guys because no one here is stagnant with who we are. It's never been, oh, I'm here, we've made it, we're good, unquote. Besides, the Dodgers players will tell you, how can they sit on their laurels when the front office and the ownership certainly did not? They signed players all winter, whether it was 2-time Cy Young winner Blake Snell, or Japanese sensation Roki Sasaki, or even bringing back Enrique Hernandez on a 1-year, $6.5 million contract last week. What ownership did, Rojas said, they sent us a message. It was, we're not just happy winning one championship. We want to do more. We're going to put pressure on you guys to deliver because we're giving you the pieces that you guys need to continue and make another great run. So we're hungry. We want to go out there and prove that we're still the best team in baseball, unquote. And again, that feature is entitled Champion Dodgers Thinking Dynasty, quote unquote, we are hungrier than ever, written by USA Today sports columnist Bob Nightingale. And in another baseball feature, this one's entitled, National League Rookie of the Year is Ready for His Encore. Are opposing hitters? This feature, written by Gabe Lackus, a columnist for USA Today, Dateline, Bradenton, Florida. As Paul Skene's lumbering stride crossed field number one to field number two at the Pittsburgh Pirates spring training complex, a wave of humanity followed his every step. Kids wearing LSU hats or donning fake mustaches in tribute to the reigning National League Rookie of the Year scampered around ropes in a wave of humanity, shouting his name in hopes of snagging an autograph. Parents followed suit, skin pale from the Pittsburgh winter and determined to bask in the brightest ray of sunshine to touch the Pirates organization this decade. At 6'7" and 235 pounds, Paul Skene could not hide on a baseball diamond if he tried. Yet this past Saturday, when he faced live batters for the first time this spring, it only illuminated how much has changed in 1 year when Skene faced enormous expectations in his first full professional season and more than exceeded those expectations. Now it is about refinement and efficiency and raising floors along the ceilings, a daunting task when you finish third in Cy Young Award voting just 23 starts into your career. Yet this is Skene's, so talented, almost equally focused, and quietly setting the stage for a much-anticipated year number two. Obviously, it is a privilege. It's not something I'm going to run away from, says Skene of his status as the most notorious pirate, his profile cresting in the Steel City and almost equally across Major League Baseball. Quote, it's not something I noticed a ton. I noticed it today, and that was pretty much the first time. Things change. People talk to you differently and all that kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, it's about executing, unquote. That Skene did in 2024. He struck out 170 batters in 133 innings, pitched to a 1.96 ERA, posted a 0.95 whip, and most important, the Pirates won 15 of his 23 starts. The dominance exceeded even the considerable hype that came with his number one overall selection in the 2023 draft out of LSU. And given the ease with which the ball rockets from his hand at an average 99 miles per hour, and the hopeless waves at the ball as opposing batters struck out 33% of the time, it only felt like a beginning. To that end, Skene started just 23 games last year, but that number will, given good health, begin with a 3 this year. He has been tinkering with two new pitches, a cutter and a running two-seam fastball, to pair with his fastball and the devastating quote-unquote splinker that were more than enough to silence lineups last year. Man, anything that looks like a fastball and doesn't end up being a fastball, we all know how special his fastballs are, says pitching coach Oscar Marin. That's just something that's going to open up the zone even more, unquote. Most notably, Skene hopes to improve his pitch efficiency. No, not by pitching to contact, silly, but rather ramping up first strike percentages and put batters away sooner in the count. Even as he adjusted to the big leagues, Skene completed 6 innings in 15 of his 23 starts and pitched into the 7th inning in 5 more. And then there is the being Paul Skene piece of it. Far from a wide-eyed rookie a year ago, Skeens nonetheless had to shake a lot of hands and listen furtively to veteran voices. He had reached the major leagues by May and never looked back while forming a 1-2 duo and kinship with fellow SoCal rookie Jared Jones. Jones and Skeens and veteran Mitch Keller all want that opening day assignment, which would seem likely to go to the reigning rookie of the year. Yet it is the conversations and conversation of energy among that group that should both benefit the Pirates and change the dynamic for their marquee attraction. "Last year, I was meeting everybody," says Skeens. "This year, it's definitely less of that 'I'm the new kid in school,' and more so, 'Welcome to second grade. All your first grade friends are back after a long summer. It's good to see everybody, and we have a unique opportunity to create a dynamic in the locker room this year," unquote. Paul Skeens' offseason was a little different than it was for his teammates. He and girlfriend Livy Dunn, the LSU gymnast and online force, are in demand from red carpets to the Super Bowl to all things Baton Rouge. Skeens' public persona is that of a slow-pulsed, unperturbed dude, be it from borderline paparazzi situations to the standard demands of an elite athlete in a town like Pittsburgh. He did a remarkable job managing that and continued it this offseason, Pirates general manager Ben Cherington tells USA Today Sports. "It comes along with the territory of who he is, but there's a lot of interest in him around the world and a lot of interest in his time. In some ways, I joke about it that spring training is maybe an opportunity to be a baseball player again. Show up early with the guys, have breakfast and do your bullpen, take a breath. I'd be happy for him if he's able to do that," unquote. Yes, there's plenty of anticipation baseball-wise, and not just on the days that Skeens pitches. The Pirates have finished last or second to last in the NL Central Division for 8 consecutive years. After their 3-year run of wild card success last decade, they have missed the playoffs in 29 of the past 32 seasons. The club has again brought back Andrew McCutchen, the 2013 National League MVP, and reunited with infielder Adam Frazier, a Bucco from 2016 until a 2021 trade. Adam Frazier stepped into the box against Skeens in his live batting practice session and, though Skeens is nowhere near ramped up, called it quote-unquote electric and saw plenty of pitches no competent batter can do anything with. He hopes that the group can awaken the town from its hardball slumber. Quote, "Pittsburgh cares about their baseball," says Adam Frazier. "They're hungry for some winning. We want to be able to give them that. It's cool to be appreciated by the city like that. They support their guys. They care deeply. And it's cool that they have our back," unquote, says Pirate manager Derek Shelton, quote, "I think Paul is laying the groundwork to be a big fixture in the Pittsburgh community, not only with the things that he does on the field, but off, I think, he embraces that. When you kind of hit the baseball world by storm like he did last year, fans are going to attach themselves, not just in Pittsburgh, but throughout the league. We've seen that," unquote. Skeens' Rookie of the Year conquest means that he already has one full year of service time. A repeat of that season would likely stimulate the Pirates' interest in attempting to lock down Skeens past the 5 more years that he currently has under their control. Yet that episode is likely another year away. For now, Skeens hopes that the good vibes trickle down to Jones and Keller, to Bailey Falter and Johan Oviedo, or anyone else that may crack the rotation. Quote, if we raise the floor on our staff as well as raise the ceiling, that's the goal, to get better as we go on, unquote, says Skeens. That's the opportunity, regardless of who's the guy. It's not hard to figure out who the guy is. Just follow the scampering, stumbling masses in hot pursuit of the Rookie of the Year. And again, that feature is entitled National League Rookie of the Year is Ready for His Encore. Are Opposing Hitters? Written by Gabe Lackes, columnist for USA Today. And in another baseball feature, this one is headlined, Bregman Brings Swagger That the Red Sox Need. And this feature, written by Gabe Lackes of USA Today, Dateline, Fort Myers, Florida. The swaggering ballplayer and the once proud baseball town consummated their relationship this weekend, an engagement that may only last 1 year, yet might prove too bountiful and beautiful for both sides to see it end. Alex Bregman is a Boston Red Sox, and last Sunday morning, the nagging details. What position will he play? Will he opt out of his $120 million 3-year deal after just 1 season? Could be of mind. Certainly, there have been ideal fits between big-time free agent and a franchise willing to spend money. Yet, rarely has a player's skill set, such as Bregman's punishing statistics at Fenway Park and peripheral contributions nestled so snugly together like the green monster tucked above Lansdowne Street. The Red Sox won 4 World Series championships since the year 2004, yet have missed the playoffs 5 of the past 6 years. Bregman has never missed out on them in 8 full seasons with the Astros. The twin flame has been lit. Quote, I've been fortunate to be in the playoffs the first 8 years of my career, Bregman says Sunday morning at Fenway South after a whirlwind 48 hours meeting teammates and staff. And I plan on continuing to do that here. I plan on winning here, unquote. There is a certain glint that Bregman gets in his eye, usually when he's about to say something significant or do something otherworldly on the baseball field. He was a World Series champion in 2017 and 2022, but the sign-stealing scandal that dogged the 2017 champs and ensnared Red Sox manager Alex Cora, then Houston's bench coach, took much of that swagger away. Audacity gave way to anodyne. Bregman and his teammates were mercilessly booed wherever they went, including Fenway Park, where the Astros eliminated Boston in 2017, 2019, and 2021, with Boston getting the upper hand on Houston on its way to the 2018 title. But in Boston, the past 7 years has seen a model franchise desiccated, now in its 3rd general manager since then, and with the growing sense that free agents did not seriously consider Boston a destination. And why would they? Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Roki Sasaki barely gave it a thought before they bolted to the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Red Sox were in the Juan Soto sweepstakes long enough to perhaps qualify for a cake with "At Least You Tried" written in frosting. A wild card lottery ticket in 2021 was the only campaign to break up a string of third and last place finishes. The Fenway ticket was now a soft one. And as Bregman festered on the market, letting a six-year, $156 million deal with Houston grow stale on the shelf, the Red Sox's sense of desperation kicked in. Club chairman Tom Warner, he's also chair of Liverpool Football Club, called agent Scott Boras at 3:30 a.m. London time. General manager Craig Breslow called Scott Boras 13 times, the agent recalls. And owner John Henry got involved, bemoaning what the Red Sox have become, which might come to news to a fan base that sensed that Fenway Sports Group grew indifferent to years of mediocrity while having eyes for their other sports holdings. There was a bit of a charge, a bit of an onus to really return back to winning, says Scott Boras, and a conversation I had with John where he expressed a sincerity and more of a passion of saying that we're missing something here that should be here, that has been here, something that's been lost, and we have a strong intention to return it, unquote. Bregman, Cora believes, is the perfect messenger. Cora calls everyone kid, give or take, but Bregman is now 30 with a two-year-old son named Knox that already has Boras Corporation officials salivating at his swing. Wife Reagan, says Bregman, will start an executive leadership program at Harvard Business School with the family in Boston. And Cora saw firsthand in his 1 year in Houston just what Bregman brings to a clubhouse, to a dugout, and throughout an organization. Quote, one thing he's going to do, he's going to challenge everybody here, says Cora. He's going to ask about pitch usage and swing decisions and scouting reports and the nutrition side of it. Not in a bad way. He wants to learn and wants to be involved. In 24 hours, his teammates, the front office, the coaching staff has already seen what I've been talking about a long period of time. This kid gets it. He commanded my attention in 2017, and throughout the years, he's kept evolving, getting better. For him, it's his family, baseball, and winning, unquote. Bregman is a two-time All-Star, a Gold Glove and Silver Slugger winner, owner of an 848 OPS, and that Fenway track record, a 375 average, 490 OBP, and a 1.240 OPS in 21 games, everyone swooning over. Yet, even still, he could be gone in a year. Despite his track record, Bregman opted to accept what Scott Boras calls a quote-unquote bridge contract, much like the half-dozen players he has guided that way the past 2 years. In most cases, it works out famously for the recipient. Just look back at Blake Snell's $182 million deal this year, but can create the impression that the upcoming season may just be a way station for the player. It doesn't have to be that way. Carlos Correa opted out with the Minnesota Twins, only to return. Matt Chapman signed a bridge deal with San Francisco and ultimately signed an extension. Cody Bellinger remained with the Chicago Cubs before a trade to the New York Yankees. Bregman, who has a passion for racehorses that he shares with now teammate Walker Buehler, is more than ready to bet on himself. I believe in my ability, he says, that familiar glint returning to his eye with a nine-figure guarantee and a chance to show out for a new and ravenous baseball market. And I look forward to proving it, unquote. That fortitude enabled him to forego the $171 million contract offer from the Detroit Tigers, where both winning and offensive production in Comerica Park might have been harder to come by. While his $120 million guarantee has significant deferrals, the $40 million annual value is in the 95th percentile for multi-year contracts. Still, turning down more than $50 million more in guaranteed money isn't for the faint of heart. You add here to what the player's about. There's some players you'd never do this with, says Scott Boras. But with a guy like Alex Bregman, he is just built with an understanding of himself, a confidence. He trusts his preparation, unquote. Last Sunday, Bregman seemed both relaxed and edgy, playfully tossing a Red Sox cap on agent Scott Boras's head, looking nearly starry-eyed, mentioning how his favorite player, Red Sox legend Dustin Pedroia, calling him several times to recruit him along with current Red Sox shortstop Trevor Story. These Red Sox can use him. Franchise player Rafael Devers, beginning the third year of a $313 million extension, may remain at third base while Bregman slides over to second, but Breslow says discussions on defensive alignments will be, quote-unquote, ongoing. A lineup hamstrung by underproductive DH Masataka Yoshida and defense-first players like Willier Abreu and Sedane Rafaela suddenly grows longer. And the very imposing kitty core on the way, most notably Christian Campbell, who may be the second baseman of the future and a roster impact in the present, will benefit from Bregman's tutelage. Quote, there's great players, veteran players, young players that are ready to get after it and compete, says Bregman. From the beginning of this process, ownership has met with us and expressed how they want us to win. They showed us how we have a track record of doing it before. I think everyone here is motivated to win it, unquote. And says Breslow, quote, it became clearer and clearer that Alex was the perfect fit. In Alex, we're getting an elite defensive infielder, an offensive profile that fits our park almost perfectly. Perhaps most importantly, we're getting a champion, a winner, a leader, someone who will serve as a member to our young, emerging group and will have a lasting impact on our organization, unquote. And now it's almost as if Bregman's Astro era didn't exist. Bregman acknowledged that it was quote-unquote difficult to leave Houston, and the respect level that he has for the organization and the players. And he certainly heard the boos from Fenway fans after the sign-stealing scandal was revealed, a postseason in which Houston eliminated Boston. Yeah, but it's all good, he said, grin only slightly mischievous. There's that audacity again. A look that says, watch me play and 2017 will disappear. He needed a home and the Red Sox needed a beacon and suddenly it's game on for both of them. You up your game in pressure-packed environments, he says. Starting out at LSU was about as much pressure as you can get in college. Being able to play in the playoffs the last 8 years in Boston and New York and Philly and Houston yourself, there's a pressure you put on yourself. It locks you in, unquote. For at least 1 year and perhaps much longer. And again, that feature is entitled Bregman Brings Swagger That the Red Sox Need, written by Gabe Lackus of USA Today. And in another shorter feature on the Bregman trade, the headline reads, Astros Move into the Post-Bregman Era, written by Gabe Lackes again of the USA Today, Dateline Jupiter, Florida. For the Houston Astros, it did not come as a total shock. In the wake of franchise cornerstone Alex Bregman ending his 9-year stint in Houston to accept a 3-year, $120 million contract with the Boston Red Sox, there's at least half a moment to spare to appreciate the man who was a driving force in 2 World Series championships and 7 consecutive trips to the American League Championship Series. Quote, Alex Bregman had a hell of a run here with us, unquote, says Astros general manager Dana Brown, telling USA Today Sports last week. We hate to see him go, but we wish him the best. Boston's getting a really good player, good defender, and will hit for power over the Green Monster for sure, he added. Yet the pivot to moving forward is coming very naturally for a club that had an agreement to trade for Nolan Arenado, acquired infielder Isaac Paredes from the Chicago Cubs, and largely cinched Bregman's departure in signing first baseman Christian Walker to a 3-year, $60 million contract. In the aggregate, they can likely make up for a player with a startling 848 career OPS, 191 career homers, and a career-best 8.9 WAR season in 2019, one of the Astros' 3 trips to the World Series since 2017. There's only one Bregs, however, that smirking and swaggering ballplayer who might hit a home run and carry the bat to first base, poke their division rivals before popping the cork on a division title, and give the Astros that little extra that made them reviled outside of the 713 area code. It's hard to replace him, says manager Joe Espada, because for him, it was genuine and it came out naturally. Replacing those intangibles is difficult, but we do have those guys with those intangibles. One thing our leaders have done in the past is develop other leaders. I'm sure our players, after they saw that news in the morning, thought, okay, it's my turn now to take over some of that leadership role, and I expect someone to do that, unquote. Bregman was a free agent after his 6-year, $100 million extension expired. While he festered on the market into spring training, the $40 million average annual value marks a significantly higher salary than the $26 million he would have earned had he accepted the Astros' standing offer of 6 years and $156 million. He also turned down the Detroit Tigers' offer of 6 years and $171 million. Now he gives the Red Sox, Astros playoff combatants in 2017 and 2021, the sense of a sleeping giant, all while having to replace slugging outfielder Kyle Tucker, who was traded to acquire, in part, Paredes from the Chicago Cubs. There's a chance that you may play him again in the postseason, says Brown. That's part of the game as well. We feel good about our club and some of the things that we've been able to do, like putting Paredes at third. We feel that his bat is going to play in our ballpark. He's got big power. At first base, we felt like we added 2 guys who we feel fit in the top 5 in our lineup. And we lost 2 that hit in the top 5 in Bregman and Tucker. We still feel like it's a competitive ball club with a good chance to win the division and go deep into the postseason, unquote. And again, that short feature entitled Astros Move into the Post-Bregman Era, written by Gabe Lackes of USA Today. And let's do one more baseball feature. This one's entitled Mike Trout Gives Right Field a Try, Ready to Prove the Critics Wrong. This feature, written by Bob Nightingale, columnist for USA Today, Dateline Tempe, Arizona. Oh yes, you better believe Mike Trout saw it. He stays off social media, but is well aware of the recent rankings from Major League Baseball Network that had him as only the 39th best player in baseball. He understood it, but you better believe it provided all the motivation that he needed to prove everybody wrong once again this year. Quote, oh yeah, he said, smiling. Stuff like that fires you up a little bit, unquote. Trout realizes that he has played only 111 games the past 2 years for the Los Angeles Angels and hasn't played more than 140 games since the year 2016. But still, he's a three-time MVP, 11-time All-Star, and a future Hall of Famer. They're going off the last couple of years, Trout said last Monday morning, and I haven't been there, so that's their ranking. I know where I stand, unquote. Trout arrives at training camp for his 15th season, and this time as the Angels' new right fielder. Manager Ron Washington and general manager Perry Manassian met privately with Trout last Sunday and informed him that he's moving from center field to right field and will also be used as a designated hitter. Simply put, the Angels believe that switching positions will provide a better chance for him to stay healthy. Trout, age 33, has been the Angels' everyday center fielder since 2014, and he hasn't played right field since 2012, and only 17 games in his career. Yet, if the move helps keep him healthy and is better for the team, he says he is all for it. Besides, if 9-time Gold Glove center fielder Torrey Hunter can be asked by the Angels to move from center field to right field, who is he to argue? They threw everything on the table. What's best for me body-wise? Keep me on the field, Trout said. Come to the conclusion that I'm going to go to right field. I'll try it out and see where it goes, unquote. Former Angels general manager Joe Maddon broached the idea 2 years ago of Trout moving out of center field, but he balked and remained in center until now. I knew it was coming, Trout said. I just got to get used to it, trying to preserve the legs and go out there and run some balls down in right field, unquote. Trout knows it certainly will be different playing right field, but plans to talk to Hunter, a special assistant in the Angels organization, to collect his thoughts when he comes to camp. Quote, there's a lot of guys that move to right field that I'm going to talk to, Trout said. Just see the difference and just go out there and get comfortable in the spring, unquote. Trout hit 10 home runs and 14 RBIs in his first 29 games last year, stealing 6 bases, but then he tore the meniscus in his left knee in late April and suffered the same injury attempting to rehab in the minor leagues. It was the latest injury-plagued season after playing in 36 games in 2021 because of a calf injury, 119 games in 2022 because of a bad back, and 82 games in 2023 with a fractured hand. He came to camp lighter, saying that he feels more like myself and won't play any differently than in the past. I am not going to limit myself, Trout said. I can still play the game hard. That's the only way I know how to play. But just limit the overall beatdown and the wear and tear. That's the biggest thing. You know, the last few years have been tough. Unquote. Less ground to cover in right field and more games as a DH could lead to some games out of the trainer's room. I think trying to limit the crazy plays, and I think moving to right field helps a little bit, Trout said. Center field, you're running gap to gap. I think mixing in DH, just stuff like that, is going to be a see how I feel kind of thing. If I come in feeling something or feeling sore, if I need a day off, it's just open communication with Washington and the front office and the coaches, and I'm good with that, unquote. Trout still has 6 years and $212 million left on his contract, so he is certainly not going anywhere. He remains the face of the franchise and has a full no-trade clause. If he ever again resembles the perennial MVP candidate who hit 308 with a 1.009 OPS, averaging 35 homers and 92 RBIs a year between the years 2012 and 2019, maybe it could jumpstart the Angels into contention. They have been to the postseason once in Trout's career. If nothing else, a monster year could bring back the discussion whether the Angels would be better off trading him, using the savings to help them get back to being a power in the American League West. That's a discussion for another day, but for now, Trout is back with a new position and fired up to prove a whole lot of people wrong. Oh yeah, he said. And again, that feature entitled, Mike Trout Gives Right Field a Try, Ready to Prove the Critics Wrong, written by Bob Nightingale, columnist for USA Today. And from baseball news, let's turn now to some NFL news. Headline reads, Best Fits for T. Higgins, Sam Darnold, and other free agents as the NFL free agency period approaches. NFL free agency is just around the corner. The NFL's legal tampering period begins on March the 10th, while the new league year starts at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on March the 12th. Where might the top free agents land? USA Today Sports examines the best fits for the top free agents, starting with T. Higgins, whose 2024 team was the Bengals. Best fit for Higgins would be the Los Angeles Chargers. Justin Herbert lacks weapons. The Chargers are in desperate need of an ex-receiver to play alongside of slot man Ladd McConkey. Next up, we have Trey Smith, who played for the Chiefs last year. The best fit for Trey Smith would be the Houston Texans. Based on Super Bowl 59, the Kansas City Chiefs can ill afford to weaken their offensive line, but the Chiefs might not be able to afford the standout guard. Houston could swoop in. Next is Chris Godwin, wide receiver for the Buccaneers. Best fit for Godwin, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Godwin suffered a season-ending ankle injury in Week 7, but was one of the NFL's leading receivers before then. Pittsburgh does not have a reliable wide receiver outside of George Pickens. Godwin produces when he's on the field, and he can also be a mentor for Pickens, who sometimes doesn't play up to his potential. Next is Javon Holland, safety for the Miami Dolphins. Best fit for Holland, the Minnesota Vikings. Holland has a lot of range as a safety and is an anchor in the defensive backfield. Minnesota can certainly revamp its safety room. veteran Harrison Smith is contemplating retirement, and Cameron Bynum is a free agent. Haaland would be a huge boost of youth and athleticism to the Vikings' defensive backfield. Next, we look at DJ Reed, who's a cornerback who played for the Jets last year. Best fit for Reed is the Atlanta Falcons. Reed is a bit undersized at 5'9", but he has good coverage skills. Reed could reunite with former Jets defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich in Atlanta. The new Falcons defensive coordinator knows Reed's skill set very well. Next, we look at Ronnie Stanley, a tackle with the Ravens last year. Best fit is to stay with the Baltimore Ravens. Stanley started every game for Baltimore and established himself as the top left tackle available in free agency. The Ravens are still a Super Bowl contender. It will behoove Baltimore to bring Stanley back. Next up, we see Stephon Diggs, wide receiver, who played for the Texans last season. Best fit for Stephon Diggs, the Houston Texans again. Diggs suffered a torn ACL during his first season in Houston and seems more suited as a number two receiver at this stage of his career. But the Texans have a void at wide receiver after Tank Dell's gruesome knee injury. Next on the list is Khalil Mack, the edge rusher who played for the Chargers last year. Best fit for Khalil Mack, the Los Angeles Chargers again. Joey Bosa is a potential cut candidate. The Chargers could save approximately $25 million by releasing him. Mack isn't quite the disruptive force that he once was, but he still makes plays and is a veteran leader. Next on the free agency list is Amari Cooper, wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills. Best fit for Amari Cooper, the Arizona Cardinals. Marvin Harrison Jr. was asked to be Arizona's top wide receiver on day one. He performed well, but didn't quite live up to the expectations. Cooper's veteran leadership and presence on the field could be advantageous for Harrison and the Cardinals' pass offense. And next on the list of free agents, linebacker Zach Bond of the Philadelphia Eagles. Best fit for Vaughn, the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles cannot let Bond walk out the door after his breakout year. The 28-year-old was named a first-team All-Pro and is entering what should be the prime of his career. Next on the free agent list, Sam Darnold, quarterback for the Vikings. Best fit for Sam Darnold, the Las Vegas Raiders. Darnold had career highs in every major statistical quarterback category, but reverted to his journeyman quarterback form in his final two games of the season. J.J. McCarthy appears ready to take the reins in Minnesota. The Raiders are searching for a starting quarterback. Darnold and head coach Pete Carroll both have a Southern Cal Trojans connection. Another free agent who'll be on the market soon, Josh Sweat, edge rusher for the Eagles. Best fit for Sweat, the Los Angeles Rams. Will the Eagles be able to re-sign Josh Sweat? He'll have plenty of suitors, especially after his play in Super Bowl 59. Defensive Rookie of the Year Jared Verse and Sweat would form an imposing pass rush duo. Next on the list of NFL free agents, Haason Reddick, edge rusher for the Jets. Best fit for Reddick, the Raiders. Las Vegas has the salary cap space to splurge on a pass rusher to pair with Max Crosby. Next on the free agent market, Nick Bolton, linebacker for the Chiefs. Best fit for Bolton, the Chiefs. Bolton is steady and productive, and wears the green dot and is the captain of the Chiefs' defense. It would be a big loss for Kansas City's defense if he bolts in free agency. Next on the list of free agents, Justin Reed, safety for the Chiefs. Best fit? The Chiefs. Reed is an anchor in the defensive backfield for the Chiefs. He declared that he wants to be back in Kansas City after the team's blowout Super Bowl 59 loss. Another free agent on the market, DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Chiefs. Best fit for DeAndre Hopkins? The Ravens. The Deontay Johnson experiment did not work out in Baltimore. Maybe the Ravens give Hopkins a try. Hopkins desires to be with a contender at this point of his career. Next on the list is Charvarius Ward, cornerback for the 49ers. Best fit for Ward, the Detroit Lions. Ward was a 2023 Pro Bowl and a second-team All-Pro at cornerback. The Lions had the 30th-ranked pass defense in the NFL last season. Lions cornerback Carlton Davis is slated to hit free agency, too. Then there's Cam Robinson, a tackle for the Minnesota Vikings. Best fit for Robinson in free agency? The Kansas City Chiefs. At age 29, he still has plenty of productive years left. The Chiefs must fortify their offensive line after a disastrous showing in Super Bowl 59. Their left tackle spot was a revolving door this season. That's all the time that we have for this edition of Sports Today. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great evening. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info. And you could hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.